Hello and welcome to the AdTech with a Like Audience podcast. This podcast is brought to you by a Like Audience, the premier audience targeting company with high-performing mobile audience segments. Every month, we spotlight leading executives and marketers from industry-leading companies around the world. My name is Duncan Craig. I've been a business and technology journalist in the APAC region for a decade and worked in ad tech, content, and comms since 2013. We aim to speak to as many interesting people in the ad tech, digital marketing, and advertising industry across the world. Today, we have two guests on the podcast to talk about data clean rooms and data collaboration. Juan Barón is the Director of Business Development and Strategy for Media and Advertising at sensitive data collaboration platform Decentric, which offers data clean room solutions for large enterprises. Born and raised in Colombia, Juan's experience spans over 20 years across ad tech agencies, publishers, and multiple startup exits in the US. He previously led digital transformation at multinational Swiss media holding group Ringier AG, and he now resides in Zurich, Switzerland, helping Decentric expand its confidential computing data cleanrooms technology internationally. Yes, he's going to be teaching us a lot. Joining us is Bosco Lam, the co-founder of Alike Audience. Bosco is an addressability working member of the IAB Tech Lab in the US, has expertise in behavioral economics and consumer data, and is passionate about empowering marketers to reach their target customers through connecting data and media and developing privacy-safe audience targeting solutions. Juan, Bosco, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Now, today, Bosco is going to lead the conversation because we know that the data clean room space is fast moving and Bosco has an intense interest in the data collaboration world and how it works. So we're going to hand over to you, Bosco, and to lead with discussion points, and I'll chime in with a big future forecast question at the end. Bosco.
Thank you, Duncan, and a pleasure to have you here, Juan, today with us. So I would like to set the stage, actually, when everyone understands the value of data collaboration, but we understand also there are limits to doing so. Maybe, Juan, before we deep dive into the question, tell us a few words. How did you come across all the way to Switzerland and also in the industry of data clean room?
Oh my God, my story is ever-changing. So I was born and raised in Colombia. I got a scholarship to go to school in the U.S. I lived for 7 years in Atlanta. That's how I discovered the ad tech industry before it was really known as ad tech. So back in the day when there were still Overture and Ask Jeeves search engines, then I went into the social media ad tech space. So I've always worked in platforms between Atlanta, New York, worked very closely with the agencies. And then I was hired by Ringier in Switzerland to come and lead the digital transformation through the publishing lens, where I built a very large team in one of the largest newsrooms in the country. So that's why my experience is a little bit all over the place. And then I eventually ended, I was an entrepreneur for a few years during COVID. And then I ended up in Decentric, going back to ad tech, but in a more sensible ad tech, because obviously data clean rooms are all about protecting user privacy. So the world in advertising is really changing very rapidly.
Wonderful. Thanks, Juan, for that. So before we came into this podcast, we briefly chatted about the existing practices, right, to handle and to, you know, manage and respect users' data privacy. And we also mentioned about there are two approaches. One is passive, which is bounded by the legal constraints, right, versus an active approach that you mentioned. And we believe that will be and the future, which is a technological way to empowering data collaboration. Would you mind tell us more about comparing the passive and the active approaches?
The good thing about GDPR is that it puts a framework around what you need to do and behave around consumer data. But I think in general, companies have always wanted to collaborate, even through a passive way. The challenge with the previous ways of collaborating without the technologies like Decentric, it was mostly led by legal. So these are lawyers kind of handling all the oversight. And there's a lot of restrictions because as an organization, even though you're doing things legally, compliantly, even legally approved, right, by your own team, the minute you hand over your data, you lose control. It doesn't matter if you mask it, if you create synthetic data, it's still you're losing control. And that is a key difference now in the new world of data collaboration platforms like Decentric, where we truly fundamentally believe that the data owners, whether it's a hospital group collaborating with a pharmaceutical company, or whether it's a bank collaborating with a publisher through the lens of advertising, it's every single data owner is treated equally. And in our platform, the code is the contract. So it's the model that is being run has to be vetted and approved by every single data owner. And that is only what is allowed to run in the data clean rooms from Decentric. So in a way, we remove a lot of the legal burden that comes in place, but we also embed everything that is, you know, legally sound. So GDPR, obviously, and all the things that we built around it are built around privacy first frameworks.
Very interesting. So when we take a look at that particular PETS, right, what we call the privacy enhancing technologies, actually IAB has suggested an array of tools from, you know, consent management systems, CDPs, and data clean rooms. Would you mind walk us through, from a corporate point of view, how this array of tools would come together and work towards the requirements under the GDPR or other legal constraints?
Well, the customer data platforms are mostly around understanding a 360-degree view of your customer. That is really at the core, the basics, what the customer data platform is meant to be. It's like the next generation of CRMs, as they call it. And these are very powerful platforms, so there's a lot of rich first-party data living within these systems. The question is, how do you create value out of that data through the lens of a collaboration? The consent management platforms are really built around, obviously, GDPR was a big push, a tailwind into these platforms, because in digital advertising, you're either doing open web, where you have to have consent about tracking the user, and leveraging that individual user's data for the purpose of processing the data and using it with another third party. So that is kind of gravitating and consolidating into two different data sources that consolidate into one single data stream, right? Because you also need the consent of the individual, but you also need the other data points of the CDP. And then eventually you make that available in a clean room. Now, there are different ways, especially with Decentric. The way we build Decentric is we are at the core just a data processor. We are not in the joint controller game, because of the way we built the technology. It's based on hardware, not on software encryption. Each individual data owner has its own encryption keys. We have no way of accessing those encryption keys. And we put all the trust and the security and the privacy constraints on the data into these very special microprocessors developed by Intel, NVIDIA, and AMD. So everything that we do, anything that the data owner does, like, they don't even need to trust Decentric in a way. We built a system called remote attestation that is very heavy in the privacy-enhancing technology space, where every data owner can actually interact with the chip. And we created the highway to allow, like the mechanism to the data owner to communicate with the chip and validate what is actually happening in the clean room, what kind of code is being run, who's accessing, who's running the code, each individual user. So it creates like a tamper-proof audit log. So It clears a lot of legal hurdles, compliance hurdles, information security, IT security hurdles, all the nuances around due diligence of onboarding a customer. It just ticks all the boxes because of the way the technology is built. Now, the IAB, going back to your question around the IAB and the PET thing, the data cleanroom space is getting crowded. Not all data cleanrooms are created equal, and the truth is starting to surface. And it's good that we're starting to be compared to other data cleanrooms once the compliance or the information security teams of any brand or publisher does the assessment, they'll quickly realize that they eventually, if they need to trust a data cleanroom, that is not really a data cleanroom. It's the simplest way to describe it. Yeah.
Interesting you bring that up. Because from a layman perspective, a data cleanroom sounds like an abstract room that, you know, hosts the data set. So let's take one step back. A lot of our clients actually, or data owner, they actually ask, what is the differences between a data cleanroom versus CDPs and a data warehouses, right? Because from the perspective, they already set up their own cloud computation with their nice data lakes or data warehouses. Why do I need an extra room, right, in order to collaborate? How would you approach that?
Well, the answer is quite simple. If you're a data owner and you have your own data warehousing instance, let's say you're using Snowflake inside of GCP, and then the other customer is using Databricks on Azure. So the one from Azure or Databricks is not going to send over the data to Snowflake. You need a neutral ground where each individual data owner can actually enable that trusted collaboration in a neutral zone where we can then collaborate and extract insights. That is why you need an independent data cleanroom. That is the simplest answer. You need something in the middle. In cheesy terms, you need the Switzerland of data. Let's put it that way.
Interesting. That's why you end up in Switzerland, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can definitely claim we're the real Switzerland of data.
That's good. So let's deep dive into that, right? It is exactly we encounter the reality with, let's say, a retailer that they are using a clean room vendor A, and a brand that comes with a clean room vendor B. So how would that common ground could be resolved? Do they need to adopt each other's cleanroom vendor? Do they need a common protocol in order to work together? Would it defeat the purpose of having a common ground in order to collaborate if each of them have different vendors?
So this whole concept of interoperability, obviously, it's an interesting topic. We are, from a Decentric point of view, we're completely agnostic to the data input and output. So one thing that makes Decentric a little bit different is that we are not in the data storage space. Like you don't use Decentric to store a copy of your entire data warehouse and then eventually make it available for collaboration. What you do with Decentric is more like Snapchat. These are ephemeral data clean rooms. So you send the data to for computation and that's it. It's a single purpose mini clean room in a way, but you can create thousands and thousands of clean rooms for different types of computations with 100 or either from 1 to 1,000 different data collaborations in one single clean room. So when it talks to interoperability, that example that you've given, let's pretend it's a very large CPG brand. They have their own data clean room of choice. They want to protect their own data. It becomes more of a negotiation between the particular retailer and the CPG brand to say, who's going to be in charge of the computation? And most importantly, the output of the data, of the insights, where is it going to go? And for that particular reason, we are 100% from the ground up interoperable from the start. It all depends on how other clean rooms are structured and behave from an architecture point of view, whether they can actually magically ingest data from somebody else and then compute it. And then eventually export the results. But it's more of where the like if the CPG brand trusts the vendor of the data clean room from the particular retailer, right? If we're talking about highly sensitive data, or maybe the CPG brand uses something like Decentriq, where in a case you don't even really need to trust Decentriq, and then the retailer confidently can actually upload their data into Decentriq just for the purpose of that particular computation.
Thank you, Yuan. Wonderful insights. Let's also jump into another topic that I think a lot of our clients are interested in. It's about the utility and the fidelity of data collaboration. So in the past, I have actually been working with, you know, credit bureaus and credit card companies. Obviously, all these transactional level data will be so sensitive that we cannot disclose Bosco Lab have made a $5 coffee purchase at Starbucks in that particular location, right? This would be obviously beyond the red lines that we can disclose. And what we have done is to actually model the data by indexing if this group of people are buying certain categories within the top 20% of the bracket or of the population, right? We have been doing this indexing versus we have other types of data. Let's say impression log, right? We work with DSPs and we retrieve impressions, counts, IDs on each publishers. So we have quite different kind of data sets when we mention data collaboration. And I believe you have that experience with other healthcare companies as well. Mm-hmm. How are we going to justify to what certain level of data we need to pre-process before we enter data collaboration and to what utility that we need from a data cleanroom perspective? Obviously, we can't go to line by line, but how, you know, abstract before we need to go into a collaboration?
Let me respond with one question because I would love to learn a little bit more. Up to what point, because you never had something like a data cleanroom, did the data that was being sent to you was being diluted in a way because it had to be aggregated for the purpose of privacy, right? Up to what point you got data that was maybe rolled up in certain ways where it prevented you from actually getting more sophisticated insights because the data owner was forced to actually aggregate it or dilute the data in such a way that is not as useful as you would like it to be?
Imagine if there is a retailer, right? They have thousands of SKUs. And for that particular chocolate brand, they would like to work with the CPG, right? So obviously, the retailer consists of multiple chocolate brands, and they will not be able to tell the competing brands for A and tell B what types of insights. And the approach before the retailer is having a clean room is they at best to aggregate for chocolate category. Yeah. And to show and to index what would be the purchase insights for that particular chocolate brand.
So in the particular case of data clean rooms, in particular with Decentriq, there's no need to pre-roll or aggregate the data because you can go down to the code, and the code for us is a SQL query, Python or R model. And the whole point that what we do in Decentriq is that we disclose those SQL statements or those Python and R models to the other party. So that's the whole point of making it very transparent. But you can upload then safely all the raw data that you have. And then based on the legal framework becomes it's the code, then you can actually allow the analyst and the other participating party to run whatever model they want to use on your data. So that for that particular example of the retailer with this chocolate brand, they should be able to upload all the granular data around all the different variations of chocolate brands that they offer down to the SQ level. Maybe they even want to upload transactional history based on loyalty cards data as well, down to the granular individual. But then allow the CPG brand to query that data set. And it's the retailer that approves the queries from the CPG brand. So it allows a lot more insights-driven collaboration rather than very dictated and pre-formatted in a way. I usually tend to refer this as data clean rooms, like the center, to enabling more of a data, an intimate data relationship.
So from your experience, is there any differences between the finance and banking vertical, healthcare, to, you know, CPG? Do they have different levels of granularity needs of the data sets? Because you mentioned all these data cleanroom adopters, they can go further down to the most level without feeling insecure of exposing the data sets.
At the core, the Centric is a data science collaboration platform. They can run all kinds of crazy models with all the different libraries that exist for data science. And we support most of them. And if the customer needs a new one, then we have to vet it, that it kind of passes our security guarantees, and then we embed it on the platform. Now, that the use cases is what defines the type of data that you need. So for example, we have a project ongoing with multiple pharmaceutical companies where they provide transactional data. And the whole point is that they run a monthly report among themselves. It's about 36 different pharmaceutical companies in Europe. And they run a market share analysis. Very simple use case, right? But this was never, like, imagine you trying to disclose through a central consultant in a way. Now, with a click of a button, they just upload the data, click run, and then they get the results in seconds. There is a different story around pharmaceutical companies collaborating with a hospital group, because now what they're doing is actually leveraging patient record data and running models to better predict outcomes on some of the medicines that they're testing, right? So the whole idea is to accelerate medical research. Give you another example. We have, which is public, we have a case of cyber warfare data between the Swiss National Bank, the Swiss Stock Exchange, including other cantonal banks in Switzerland. And they're all sending metadata from emails and all these other transactional data into the clean room for the purpose of national defense, right? Because just like we in Switzerland, we love to say that we export cheese and chocolate, but we also export a lot of banking. It's a national product, a critical infrastructure product. So cyber defense is quite key. And then now we go to the level of an advertiser collaborating with a publisher. You know, the more you give in terms of raw data and insights and granularity into the clean room, the better off you will be. But we built all these privacy-enhancing features inside of the clean room. So you can, for example, prevent the clean room from running processing data on records that are less than 10 rows, for example, and that can be hardwired into the clean room. Or if you want to further enhance your security, you can create synthetic data sets inside of the data clean room. So there's a lot of that's just two features. There's a lot of different things that we can actually do inside of the data clean room.
Great insights, Johan. Before we wrap up, I actually got a question. When we, as a DPOs, you know, the privacy officers, they often comes to a hard time in keep up with the innovation and technologies, while privacy laws takes time to be effective in the market. Which is the driver or the momentum that you think? Privacy enhancing technology first or privacy law first?
I don't think we can go without the other, right? I mean, the good thing about GDPR is that it's not really tied to a technology. It's a framework around processing data. So it's very agnostic to the technology. Like, they don't care about confidential computing. They don't care about computation or SMPC. They don't care about PETs. It doesn't matter. For the DPO, it's all about, where's my data? How's it going to get processed? Describe to me the data flow. Who's going to be on the receiving end? And then I can then do a proper assessment. That is really the behavior of any true DPO. Obviously, we like to, Decentric or any other data cleanroom provider would like to claim, yeah, we're the most secure, we guarantee and everything else. But at the end of the day, it's all about the data flow and the processing of the data. And I think it just goes, it's more on the legal side, to be honest, than on the PET side.
Juan, thank you. Duncan here. Wow, what a conversation. Kind of mind blown a little bit about your chip technology, hardware framework. You talked about the need to have control over data and also the ultimate goal, which is leveraging as much granular data as possible. But I'm going to hit you with two questions to wrap and one for Bosco to wrap, if you don't mind. It's a fast-moving space. There's a lot of players moving in into the market. What's it going to look like in 2 years from now, question one, at the macro, and more on the micro, how is it going to develop in that advertiser-publisher relationship? What are the key issues going to be in that particular segment of business?
So question number one, I think the market is still at a very early stage. What's fascinating for us, what we've seen because we talk to a lot of different industries, just not. Think about it this way. It's like a new muscle that a lot of people didn't know it existed. And it's a new muscle that needs training. It needs muscle memory eventually. A lot of people have been talking about data collaboration. Data is a new oil, whatever. But now it's really becoming true in a way that people are discovering that if I collaborate with partners through data, we can learn from each other and then eventually collaborate closer and have a business impact, a positive business impact. So that is at the macro level. For the advertising sector, it's very difficult to predict because ad tech is also always very difficult to predict. But confidently, we can say that data cleanrooms will play a very significant role in the advertising sector for a couple of reasons. One is obviously the deprecation of third-party cookies. So there's real signal loss. We hear this from advertisers, in particular, even more on the regulated brands, because their hands are already tied anyway on what they can do with their data. And without even third-party cookies, they're completely blind now. And the second thing around third-party cookie deprecation is that it also impacts tremendously publishers. The cool thing is now publishers have been almost kind of screwed for the past 15 to 20 years. Right? A lot of the money has been siphoned away from big tech. And now publishers have what I'd like to say is almost like once in a lifetime opportunity. The pendulum is really swinging their way. They're the ones who actually have the relationship with the readers. And they're the ones who should be able to extract that relationship with those readers, with key advertisers. And the cool thing is that data clean rooms play a very critical role in that relationship because it removes a lot of intermediaries. It allows that publisher with that relationship with that reader to leverage that data in connection with the sensitive data of that particular brand. It's not about open web advertising anymore. Through clean rooms, it's all about direct programmatic. Yeah.
You think publishers need to engage more tightly with data clean room providers?
It's not that I think, it's that what they've told me. It's a critical leg in the strategic stool. That is what they've told me. So okay. For them, they need to learn how to do it. Everybody, like I said, it's a new muscle. There's a lot of questions. I don't know how to do it. How do I go to market? Even from a sales perspective through a publisher, it's a completely new way of selling a new product. It just never existed before. It's a change management scenario. It's going to take a few years for it to scale, but it's starting already and we see it.
Thanks, Juan. Bosco, finally from you, do you agree with this scenario? And do you have additional beliefs and thoughts and forecasts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for any data owner, one key takeaway is to be prepared for the passive way and also the active approaches in data protection, right? No matter how strict user consents, how precise, you know, all these contractual wordings are, once the data is out, that's it. You can't recover and you lost the control right away. But for the active approach, you have to think about how you would govern the access right, who can read to what certain level and to what insights that can be applied in what destinations. And I think this is absolutely the future for any data owner who wants to collaborate. One example is like the lawsuit against OpenAI. The lawsuit is about without having consent, and they scrape a lot of public data for the model training. And I think this LLM model is inevitable for any companies who really want to, you know, tap into the AI game and strategy. And having a unique approach, you need your unique data to go into the model and to train and get that unique results. Obviously, you do not want this precise first-party data to be exposed to any other parties without your control. So I may have stretched it a bit too far, but if you want to tap into that AI-empowered business and you want to tap into this precise data that you have or, you know, your collaborators have, you need the clean rooms and you have to think about this active approach and how to secure your AI strategy, you know. And your next question is actually about EdTech and martech industry. And I would say EdTech data collaboration has long been in the black box, you know, how audience segments is being created, how data is being shared. We have the IB data labels, just like the food ingredients. But no matter how precise that information is disclosed to the upstream or downstream partners, we really need a technology or a framework that would show how things work, but not just only having that label on the package. Don't get me wrong. Having the label is the first step. But next is how to prove that we're doing it accordingly and to prove it to other partners in the ecosystem that we do it in the right way. So yeah, that's my prediction on the macro view and to the ad tech specific industry.
Well, thank you, Juan, and thank you, Bosco. A bit like Google scraping the internet with this AI technology to power its own products, I'm sure. I feel that we've only scraped the surface here. We could have spoken for another hour about law and data protection and privacy. Juan, I think we're going to have you back at some point.
Okay. I would love to come. No worries. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. And just to wrap up, you know, to our audience, thank you so much for listening. To find the show notes, the transcript, and more information about Alike Audience's segment offerings, jump onto the website, alikeaudience.com. And Juan Bosco, that was fascinating. To our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave us a review. We'll catch you all in the next session. Thank you. Bye.